joining us in studio. Good morning to Sterling Mayor Skip Lee, City Manager Scott Schumard.
Good morning. You know, I would do my John Denver sunshine on my shoulder. It makes me happy, but I can't reach that range anymore, and I won't subject those listening to
my You're saying there was a time you could?
There was a time I could, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I used to sing the a friend and I used to do a lot of Simon Garfunkel. I was the Art Garfunkel.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
Only if I get parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Oh, my goodness. And Mr. Schumer joining us this morning. How are you, sir?
My range is only hasn't been there since puberty, I think.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, unfortunately.
You've been busy. We went solo last time.
Is it solo? Yeah, it's been so long, actually. I don't know. It's
Oh, that's fleeting. Right.
Yes.
You know, hey, we survived.
Well, we survived, you know, the new website is going to be up and coming.
That's what you've been involved with.
Yeah, so, we're actually turning it over to department head today. We're going to turn it over to department heads to do the final edits and hopefully get it launched towards the end of the month. So,
wow. Yeah. And can you give us a hint on new editions?
It would be a whole bunch of different things to it. You can sign up for changes and calendar updates for events. We're just updating all the information. The problem is now, when we first launched it, there was one person that could edit it, and that was me. And then when we relaunched the most recent version, and oh my gosh, 10 years ago anyway, we were down to just three people, I think, who knew enough to edit around it. And now it's not much harder than using a word processor to do updates on. So it'll make it easier for each department to keep things a little bit more up to date. And it flows a lot smoother. It works. The current website was designed well before mobile phones were popular as far as web browsing devices. And so this one automatically resizes and does all the good things. So there's lots of little features on there. We're working on updating all the licenses and permits for online use. And we found photos online that go back to, I think, the 90s that were being used on web pages because it carried over from the first one that I did back in 99 when I started here. So it's a whole new revamp and hopefully easier to find and easier to use. And currently the search function on the current one doesn't work. It's for the real techies, it's still being hosted on a cold Fusion server, which is kind of passe now. And so it's time, and it looks a lot better than the old one does too. And just
We want it to be more user-friendly. You know, it's the combination of that and the app, which we are going to re-examine, because that's what we've moved into, the world of mobile phones and apps and websites. So we want to make it easier for people to get information. I know there were times I'd use the old or use the current website, and I'd want to click on something, and then if I move my mouse, all of a sudden, where I was going disappeared, and it wasn't as user friendly as we like. So yeah, Scott and the staff have put a lot of work into doing that. So I think it's going to work out well. You know, we're
speaking of the app though. Tom and I were talking just before you got here. It is pothole season. I know you're probably going to bring that up, but the mobile app is a great way to report those to us, and we've been out there. A lot of times we just have one truck, but now we've got two trucks running out there. So I saw some, I don't know, I will call them, I don't know, jabs online about reporting potholes. But realistically, half the department is basically out there filling potholes at this time. So we've got other things to maintain as far as public infrastructure goes. So when we get half the crew out there, it's hard to spot them all. And this morning, 7:15, they're rolling down Lynn Boulevard, and they're rolling down the road at 2 miles an hour trying to look for the next pothole to stop and fill. And then when you truck stops, guys hop out, fill in the pothole, move on. It you get 100 center lane miles of road, some of it being two lanes, some of it's four lanes. That's a lot of patrolling to do at 2 to 5 miles an hour, plus stopping to fill in all the potholes. So when we ask people to report them to us, we can't find every pothole every place all the time. And it's this type of weather right here, we got kind of lucky when it first warmed up above 40. The original forecast was supposed to say it was going to go above freezing during the day and then below at night. And then for like the first 3 or 4 days, it stayed above freezing all the time, which is a lot of help because it's that, I think as a lot of people know, that freeze-thaw cycle that really tears up the roads. So the snow's melting, gets into the cracks, and then overnight freezes, expands, and then during the day it turns to liquid again, contracts, and then everything that gets displaced underneath the pavement surface, you start creating gaps down below, and then eventually the pavement can't support it when things roll over it and it falls into the gaps, and then the loose parts get blown out, and that's how you end up with a pothole. And so those can happen literally overnight. So there could be what looks to be okay surface one day, but then the next day it's you don't know it, but below the surface there's a big void, and the next day it's crumbled in. So call them in, Public Works, or report it via the app. It's either way. That way we know where to find them, and we'll get out there and fix them as fast as we can. But it's hard to predict where they're going to show up because you don't know what's below the surface, unfortunately, and it's just that time of year when the freeze-thaw cycle gets to us.
And with that app, they can take a photo of it.
Yeah, you can actually take a photo. Yeah, it'll geotag exactly where it's at, so that helps us out. That's a big, huge thing for us. And so it's a lot easier to complain about them, but if we can get them fixed if we just know about them. That's just part of the problem. And again, at 5 miles an hour. And I know one of the other things I've seen online addressed was, why don't we tamp them down? And because it'd be better. Yeah, it would. Maybe it might help for long term. But there's so many holes out there to be patched, and it's a matter of how many holes we try and get filled in versus taking the time to tamp everything down, and it's just not worth it. The time, if we're going to try and get some of these holes filled, it's taking time to do that. It doesn't work. So we overfill it, and then the truck that's running safety behind the guy filling in the hole drives over it to try and get it tamped down a little bit, and then it is relying on traffic, which is why there's a little bit of mound there to kind of compact it in, because if we stopped and compacted every hole, we'd never get anything done as far as getting this holes filled.
So they kind of got a pilot car or something behind, but that's with lots of flashing
lights.
Yep,
we've got the dump truck with the cold mix or the cold patches in the front, with a second guy there to jump out and with a shovel, or walk behind it with a shovel. And then the third person is driving the truck behind it with the flashing lights, just to make sure the guy patching doesn't get run over, because we all know that we're not always the most attentive when we're driving like we should be.
So if we see that, give it some space and slow it out.
Hey, for the amateur chemists out there, figure out an adhesive that you can spray the pothole, put the asphalt in, and it sticks better. You know, you need a Gorilla Glue, not for the hair, but for the... with the potholes.
There are a few things. I mean, I know, and people see stuff online, but either there's things that are in really they're cool things that aren't really meant for prime time yet, or there are some methods that are out there, but they are expensive and they do require more time. So it becomes an issue of finding more people to actually do the work, plus because it's more time consuming to do it. I know places like Bettendorf do have a patching machine that tends to work a little bit better. But again, it's money and personnel availability versus what we've got here, and it's just not quite the same.
But, you know, and Scott's very right. If it gets reported, and I use the app when I've come across issues, bam, I don't even have to take the picture. It just tags me where I am, and, you know, I say, hey, here's the issue, whether it's code enforcement, whether it's Public Works, PD, or whatever, and... you know, then they know about it. You know, that's the problem. I think that sometimes there's assumption on some people's parts that everybody in the city reads Facebook, everything on Facebook. And that's not true. So if you see a pothole or there's an issue, we can't try and handle it if we don't know. So, yeah, let us know by all means.
So is that kind of like instant GPS marking, or how's that work?
The app does. It'll use what's on your phone to report it. So then at that point, you can do it anonymously, or you can sign up to have it followed up with, too. And the follow-up is better for code enforcement issues. We've had those reported. You know, if you've got something going on with a neighbor's home or something like that, you can track where we're at as far as the process of either getting the violation corrected or ticket issued, whatever it is. You can follow up that way. Pothole will still follow up with you, but it's just, again, it's a manpower thing, so it may not be it may be filled today, but you may not hear back and that it was filled for a day or two after that. So
Yeah, Deb Dillo, who's our executive assistant, helps monitor that. She makes sure that, you know, people are gotten back to, because that's important. But anyway, so yeah, let us know. The weather's getting good. Yeah, today's going to be a nice day.
Well, yeah, I think the slow thaw out has kind of assisted just a bit. We don't have, you know, the flooding waters running down the street and freezing in the middle of
right.
the night.
Yeah.
So that helps out a bit.
Well, you know, to remind people of their general science as freshmen, you know, the dirt that's in your front yard was once a rock. And it's that freeze-thaw breakdown, and that's exactly what happens. Yeah, and when you have, whether it's a concrete driveway or an asphalt pothole that's been filled, it's the breakdown of rock into smaller particles. That, you know, and Mama Nature always wins. She always wins.
Well, we had a city council meeting
yes.
last night, and
yeah.
I suspect we're still on protocol for recommendations, and Zoom is still in effect.
We're still Zooming. Of course, people are welcome, and the, you know, the Zoom link is readily accessible. If they can't find it, if they call down to City Hall, we'll make sure they get it. One of the, you know, we're going over budget right now, and you know, department heads have done a wonderful job of working on the budget. Last night, particularly, we had a report from the Band Commission. You know, COVID kind of kicked the band in the head because they couldn't do their two concerts plus the summer series that they normally do because of COVID, and not, you know, wanting to get a lot of people of an older demographic sitting shoulder to shoulder at the band concerts. You know, if you've ever been to the 4th of July concert, I mean, it's a huge crowd. So they ended up having to scrub the season. This year, they're all primed, ready to go. The people who committed last year have committed to come back. So, you know, we're on track, hopefully, for the outdoor concerts to take place, and that'll, you know, that'll be fun. We're also on track with Sterling Main Street for the movies in the park, and, you know, all the, if our numbers continue to look like they do, and I get the daily briefings, I think you do too, from Corey Law.
Right.
You know, our numbers are going in the right direction. I mean, when you look where we were in October versus where we are now, it's night and day. Now, that does not mean it's time to relax, go crazy, and forget. You know, that does, you know, we've got to get the population vaccinated. You know, that's been a big success in lowering in highly susceptible populations, you know, the people who are getting the COVID. But nonetheless, it means that, you know, we will begin to see some semblance of normality. They have the car show scheduled for the 2nd of May. You know, and, yeah, I always enjoy that. I love the rat rods.
Yes.
I mean, you just, those guys just absolutely amaze me. You know, I don't know how they sit in them. Those look like the most uncomfortable darn things I've ever seen in my life. But the point is that we're trying in a safe manner to go back to normality. You know, the movies in the park, you got loads of kids, and it's tough when you have kids outside to make everybody, you know, 6 feet apart and make sure that they don't rip the mask off. And at a band concert, you know, there's an older demographic that's significant there, and you don't want them, you know, getting anything. So, but we're working on it. So, you know, that's encouraging that we're going back. The movie theater is up. My gosh, if you have kids, this is the weekend to go to the movie. They've got Tom and Jerry.
Oh,
and
that's right.
Was it Raya or something in The Last Dragon?
I missed that one. I knew Tom and Jerry was there.
But so there are two, you know, great kids shows. And, in fact, the theater sold out last weekend because of COVID restrictions. You know, they can't pack them elbow to elbow. But nonetheless, you know, so the Rock River Valley is coming back. You know, we're looking at projects, you know, infrastructure improvement never goes away. We're looking at tearing down a building at the old National Complex so that we can continue working on Wallace. And Scott, why don't you fill us in on what's going on with the riverfront?
So last night at the council meeting, the council approved the low bid to take down the half of one of the buildings down there. It's a small one. It's not one of the big ones, unfortunately, just yet. But the building, if anybody is familiar that worked down there, I believe they called it the training building. It's the far west end. We're going to take down the front half of that where the training offices were, rebuild the front wall of it, and we'll retain it. The back half of it has a garage bay, and we're going to retain the back half for use as a an area for public works to help maintain the riverfront. We're going to keep a water spigot in there and be able to park some maintenance type equipment, Christmas decorations, things of that nature, and then move forward with that. We're still working. I think we talked about this last time we were here. The goal is to get Wall Street rebuilt this year. It continues to fall apart a little bit. We're trying to bend it a little bit to make sure that the area down there is redevelopable, because there's not a lot of room between the current Wall Street and the railroad tracks. And with the new riverfront, the way it was done, we had to cap the site. And so we added 3 feet of soil at a minimum to the whole thing. So now Wall Street sits 6, 7, 8 feet below the new surface. So with a realignment, we'd also build that up. And that way you can get a little bit better view of the riverfront as you're going down Wall Street. The real trick there is we've got some rail spur that crosses there, and we're the railroads are not fast moving. They may move your freight quickly, but they're not quick at responding.
They're bureaucracy.
Yes, they are very much so, and the railroads have special I don't know, I'll call it dispensation, but they do have special rules compared to most corporations when it comes to the federal government, and getting them to move or compelling them to move is more than difficult. And so we're still going back and forth. We've emailing exchanges, and had a phone exchange on the last weekend, and I got another email yesterday from the Union Pacific about the whole project. And they discovered they believe that they own even more property than we believe that they own down there. So now we're waiting on documents. And I think the only thing we found was some evidence from the 1890s on a sandboard map that shows that there were tracks on the riverfront pre-Northwestern Steel and Wire. So we're trying to figure out how, if the UP owned it, how Northwestern ever built on it. And so did they relinquish rights at some point, or did they retain the rights even though Northwestern was built on it? And it's just it's a complete mess, and it's what we thought would be a simple process of rebuilding a road has turned into quite the juggernaut, because not only that, we also have to cross some ComEd property and get them on board with allowing us to cross. It's an access drive we're trying to get across, and it's maybe a 50 by 200 piece of property. And we attempted to buy it a couple of years ago, and they made it difficult enough. And ComEd, much like a railroad, being a utility, has some different rules that they play by more by than other people. And for whatever reason, they don't like letting property go. They, as long as they've got it, they like to hang on to it. So we're working on a lease agreement now with them to be able to build the road across their driveway. And that's the mayor, he gets copied on some of this stuff. It's just it's a pain in the butt, and we're still trying to make progress on that. Meanwhile, by April 30th, the wastewater building on National, I think we hit on this, that this is the prior council meeting, we awarded the cleanup of the interior of that. So we'll be getting that going. That's the blue metal building. And then once that's cleaned up on the inside, that'll be a quick demo project for us. So that's hopefully, that one's got an April 30th deadline to be cleaned up. And the project yesterday had a 120-day expected work schedule. So as soon as they can get started here in early spring, that'll be done this summer. We've got hanging out there security system and lights for the walking paths, and that's being finalized. The designers are working with our local electrical inspector to finalize the plan on how to route everything. And then the other big one was the finishing the walking paths up. There's two gaps where we need the small bridges, and our engineers assured me just again yesterday that they're finalizing the estimates on that. And regardless of, we have a ballpark idea what it's going to be, so we know that those bridges will be done this year as well. So we've got lots in store with the interpretive signs we ordered last fall came in. So as soon as the ground rehardens, it was frozen. Now it's probably mush, and as soon as it rehardens up, we'll get down there some concrete to pour the bases, and we'll have interpretive signs along the trails, and hopefully make it a little bit more inviting place.
You know, it's amazing because you look at the railroad spur, that hasn't been used in literally in decades. UP doesn't need it. It doesn't fulfill any function for them. It goes across a road. And yet, you know, you would think we were asking them for 5 miles of their main line. You know, ComEd is the same way. And, you know, what people don't understand, too, is when you deal with these entities, in order for them to review your proposal, they charge a fee. And we're not talking $150 or, you know, $200. You know, we can be talking literally thousands of dollars to get them to consider doing what makes common sense.
So when you make a, you know, when you make that request, do you also have to send diagrams and blueprints and proposal?
Yes, because that's all the engineers have done all this. So we've passed that on. And actually, the Union Pacific wasn't as easy as even just reaching out to Union Pacific. They got back to us through a third party company who does all their consulting work to do the first round of determinations if they need the tracks or not. And we had to sign a contract with them that was open-ended, no less. And that was probably a year and a half ago that we did that. And every now and then we get an invoice for their research time, and there's you're stuck paying it, and it's you're at their mercy. And they it gets lost in the shuffle sometimes because I think it's a small project. And we've tried to reassure them multiple times that the only property that this railroad serves is a city-owned property, so we can assure them that there's no need for it, because as owners, we know what the future of it holds, and that doesn't satisfy their needs, obviously.
Well, and that's the problem here. When you have decisions being made at distances far away from Sterling. You know, that's when people talk about, you know, well, local control doesn't matter. If we were dealing with our local ComEd and UP reps, we probably could have had this thing hashed out a year ago, if not more. But because it gets caught in corporate, and you know what that's like, dealing with corporate, you know, it's, and what common sense doesn't always prevail at the corporate level, you know, you got somebody out there saying, well, you know, someday in the year 2525, if man is still alive, we're going to use the, you know, we're going to use that rail spur. I mean, it amazes me. I just, you know, that's been one of the eye-opening things about being mayor that most people never see. And that's the, you know, the how something so simple can be turned into something hugely complex, and you have no ability to change it. You know, that... It's amazing. But, you know, the good news is that when Wallace Street is redone, that makes that area more developable. It gives better access to people. We're still, we were in conversation with the Chamber about what they'd like to see as amenities down there. We have we'll be having a follow-up meeting to one that we had earlier with stakeholders about, you know, developing the riverfront. So we're moving along, you know, and once we get some I's dotted and T's crossed, then I think you see things start to move much, much more quickly. But it's, but you know, it's not easy. I wish it was just as easy as saying, here, I'll give you a check. Now let me do what I want to do.
And yeah, so that's what the important part is that the mayor points out is where this follow-up meeting we're looking to do is, we essentially had a meeting late last fall. To talk about what projects people want to see. We've done the riverfront plans, and so we said, okay, here's what has been done. Is there anything missing before we start putting together a priority list? Because I've told many people there's a huge want list, and what one person wants is not necessarily what the next person wants, and sometimes what is seen as a priority one day is seen as secondary to something else the next month. Just depends on what the focus is, and so that makes it hard for us to decide where do we put the money, because there are limited funds and there's millions and tens of millions that we could plow on the riverfront and still not get everything done that people would like to see. And we don't have tens of millions to plow into it.
Disneyland.
It's not to say we have capital funds. We're reaching out to our TIF consultants to talk about extending the Rock River TIF and see how much more funding that would be available for the riverfront through the Rock River TIF going forward if we did that. So we're trying to find all those resources that could be put together So we can come up with, I hesitate to say a few million or several million, but somewhere between a few and a several million dollars to put towards projects. But that money can disappear quickly. And when we start talking about demo projects, you know, at this point, bringing Lawrence down could be a $2 million project if that's what we wanted to do with it. Bringing National down, similar size buildings, another $2 million project. And next thing you know, there's not a whole lot left.
$2 million, the price has dropped.
Well, depends on how much you take down too, and we've got, you know, if we keep things, you know, there's roofs to be redone and security to be beefed up, and then we start talking about park amenities and whether you put a spray pad down there, whether you put an ice rink for the winters or whatever you want to do, some of these new fancy playgrounds, you're back into the seven figures on all these different things, and there's only so much to go around, and that's where we have to come up with a list of priorities and know what the prices are, because it's easy to prioritize things, but if you wanted to prioritize, you know, doing things to your house, I think about this in my own house, is, you know, I'd love to redo my back patio, and I'd also probably need to think about doing a roof sometime in the near future, and the front porch, right, we'd probably like to do something a little bit different with, and, you know, maybe redo some of the furniture. So all those things are fairly decent sized price tags on them, so I'm gonna have to, you know, personally have to prioritize things, and it's no different at the riverfront for us, is there's all these different things we'd love to do, but at the end of the day, what really is the priority, and you know, is it something where people are actively engaged, you know, like a the park or a spray pad, or is it making the community look better when you come into the community and taking care of some of the buildings that are along the riverfront, whether it's rehab or demo or, you know, in incentivizing somebody to come in and redo something with them. And it all depends. Is it access? And we've talked about, you know, being able to connect pedestrians all the way from Martin's Landing, which then goes on to Sinisippi Park and beyond, and hopefully the Park District will have it all the way out to Sauk Valley Community College in a couple of years. And connecting that all the way back down to the riverfront, and how do we go about that? It's just, there's all kinds of different things, and you know, planners will tell you that we need more connectivity down there, and find another way to get across the railroad tracks. So we've talked about quiet zones. If you want to do residential development down there, getting a quiet zone at Avenue B railroad crossing would be a huge thing. But again, with the railroad, it's not a cheap thing. I mean, you can spend tens of thousands of dollars on the study, and then it's up to you to come up with the cost to do all the things. Where Morrison's done it, they've tightened up the rules more than when Morrison did it, so it would be even more expensive for us. I know Morrison put in a good chunk of change, but it'd be even more for us. Those are just things we can't do at all, but we'd like to get started on doing something soon, so hence the priority list and coming up with the estimated costs on everything this winter, and that's what we've been working on, and now coming up also with possible future funds to do all these things with.
We're in studio on WSTR with Sterling Mayor Skip Lee, City Manager Scott Schumard. We've covered a lot of ground and a little bit more to get into.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that was really great last night was that Dr. Cortez from Sauk Valley College came and was talking about the impact program they have out there. And, it was really interesting. 94% of the student body at Sauk comes under the at-risk category from a financial standpoint. And so, you know, that's a staggering amount, but yet you would expect, all right, with that many, quote, at-risk students, you'd expect that, you know, that people wouldn't stick around. Sauk has double their national average for retention and graduation rate out there. They have, you know, they have 17% higher retention than the average college, junior college in Illinois. So, you know, they do a great job as it is. But one of the things they wanted to do was try and make young people or people aware that, number one, you can have easy access to higher ed. Two, improve the local climate, because people who get educated here and find jobs here help things out. So they established the Impact Program. And what that basically says is that for young people who sign up their freshman year, if they graduate from high school and over a four-year time do 100 hours of community service, then they're eligible to have tuition and fees paid at Sauk. You know, other than transportation, that's basically a full ride. It doesn't pay for books. But the point is, you know, that makes higher ed, and it's available to every kid, literally every kid, whether it's a vocational program, you know, and they've got to be involved in some program at SOC that's going to create a certificate or a degree. So whether you're a welder or an English major, kids are eligible for this project. There's no grade requirement in high school because I understand that, you know, sometimes in high school you have late bloomers, you have kids whose family circumstances don't allow them to do as well as they can academically. But, you know, this impact program was significant. And the big thing is to get the word out to kids, you know, especially at the grade school and middle school level, so that when they go to high school, you know, they're ready to sign up for it. I mean, I think that's wonderful. I mean, you stop and think about it. Tuition and fees paid for. And all you have to do is graduate from high school, apply for another scholarship just to learn how to do it, basically, and do 100 hours of community service over a four-year time. I don't know of a scholarship that's easier than that.
Wow.
This comes back to all the leadership. You know, Dr. Helmick has done a wonderful, wonderful job. You know, he just received a Sauk Valley Chamber Award for Chamber Champion. He just received Dixon Citizen of the Year. I mean, Dr. Helmick has been phenomenal out there at Sauk. He was a breath of fresh air in being bold and moving forward with that community college. He understands the role of the community college and how valuable it is. So we've been very lucky to have him. And this impact program, nationwide they call them promise programs. And, you know, so Sauk is very, very doing an outstanding job. So we had that presentation last night where they talked about how it was done, and it was amazing. You know, I didn't realize that 94% of the students were classified as at-risk students.
Hmm.
And also that, you know, they had, I can remember a time at Sauk when retention didn't matter. You know, they would pimp the hours at the beginning of the semester, get people to sign up for impossible loads, and then move on. When Dr. Helmick came in, he put great emphasis on not only starting somebody, but finishing someone so that, you know, people could, you know, better themselves. So that was an outstanding program. And, not all of our presentations are always as enlightening or interesting. Of course, Dr. Cortez is very, very enthusiastic. I think she could sell refrigerator freezers to Eskimos. But, you know, it's easy to be a great salesman when you have a great program. So we are very pleased to hear from her. And she sent us that presentation, and you know, maybe we can find some way to put it on our website so people can see.
Yeah, and I can only echo what the mayor said. And I'm a product of community college, not Sauk per se, but, I know as coming out of high school, a community college was kind of looked down upon, but I know when I went to four-year school after going to community college, I was deathly afraid of how much more difficult it would be. And it turned out some of my community college classes, I think, were more difficult than some of my four-year school classes were. Community college is a great – it's a jumping board, whether you want to go to a four-year school or find a more specific program to get you out in the career field right away. And I think she pointed out it was, what, $600,000 more over a lifetime of earnings. And that shouldn't be surprising to anybody, especially over a lifetime. And that goes a long, long way. But there are so many routes to go once you get into community college. And it's and for people making that transition just away from high school to college, and allowed me to keep my hometown job for a couple more years and save up a little bit more money. So when I went away to school, I had a little bit more in the savings account, and these days, and heck, it seems like it's been forever ago now. At this point, it's been 20 years since I was in college, and God knows what has happened to tuition rates at four-year schools in the last, you know, two decades. So I can't even begin to imagine that. So the deal that you're getting at community college, yeah. I know it's so much greater, and there's a lot to be said for the community college route, and I just take this chance to show. I mean, it's, you know, I went straight from community college to my bachelor's degree to my master's degree, and so just any of those stereotypes that might exist or those unwarranted ideas of what community college means. I just want to kind of help break that a little bit too, that it really is a springboard to anything you want to go to.
Oh, when I was an undergrad, I had a student loan each of my 4 years, and $1,500 student loan covered everything plus what I had for a part-time job. I can tell you, as the father of two kids who went through college, the price tag has increased significantly. My daughter went to Sauk, and she had your experience. You know, she thought, oh, you know, she'd heard high school on the highway and everything else, and she found out that, yeah, some of her toughest classes were at Sauk. And when she went on to Eastern Illinois, she sailed through because she was more focused, and Sauk had done that kind of job. You know, it's a real asset, and people sometimes take it for granted. You know, we have it, but yeah, Sauk does an outstanding job. And like I said, you know, there was a time back in the 70s and maybe 80s that it was high school on the highway. What arts crafts class can we offer? But Dr. Helmick, I'll tell you, came in, and he has really taken what was a good product and made it a whole lot better. So, yeah, Sauk is something. And right now, if I go to University of Illinois and can pay my $1,000 a credit hour to sit in front of a Zoom, or I go to Sauk and pay considerably less than that to sit into a Zoom, for the first 2 years, Bio 100 is Bio 100. So Sauk is a great deal economically, and it does a great job educationally. So we'd like to thank Dr. Cortez for being there last night. It's a wonderful thing.
Can I ask you about, well, there was a potential for a 70-foot cell tower that might have been placed somewhere. Was there a decision made on that?
Yes. The U.S. Cellular and Sterling Moose had come to the council more than a year ago to put a cell tower there on the Moose property. Mm. When they had the open hearing, there were neighbor concerns about that being there. There were issues that U.S. Cellular needed to address, and they were given ample opportunity, and we contacted them and heard nothing from them. So rather than, you know, as our lawyer, I asked a question last night, well, if we're not going to do anything affirmative, do we need to pass an ordinance? And, you know, from a legal standpoint, U.S. Cellular deserved to have council action taken on their petition. So since it had not been updated and we had not been able to get information from them and they were not pursuing it, hence we turned that down. So... is it totally dead? Well, no. At some point, if U.S. Cellular got its act together and really, really wanted it, you know, it can be addressed again. But you know, the neighbors are important, and a cell tower isn't just it's not like planting box shrubs in your front yard. You know, it has an impact on how the neighborhood looks. So the fact that the neighbors showed up and were concerned about it, you know, shows that, yeah, you know, it's not a slam dunk. But so we went ahead and said, okay, we'll just close the book on it, on this current petition, and, you know, then we can move on from there. You know, cell towers are controversial. I know that, you know, Sterling High School has one over here at Roscoe Eads, and, you know, I've gotten some phone calls about it. You know, there's some positives. Definitely it's an income-producing piece of equipment for the entity on whose property it sits. But yeah, there's some people who don't like the electronic antenna look. But that's all that was last night. No one was there to address it. Mm. Like I said, U.S. Cellular had not reacted, so we just closed the book on that petition.
Well, as we get closer to spring, anything in the works coming up that, I don't know, you got a few road ends here, or sidewalk there.
The biggest road project, and they're starting to move power poles now, is First Avenue, and we're still waiting on one other approval. This comes from anytime a road touches a state route, we've got to get IDOT approval on things. So we're waiting on IDOT's final approval on the corner of First Avenue and Fifth Street, but we're ready to go otherwise on First Avenue. Well, it's got to go out for bid, but as far as engineering goes, we're ready to go out to redo First Avenue from Fifth Street all the way up to Lefevre. So that's a huge project for us. That's a, I suspect it'll be a seven-figure project when it's all said and done, just because of the length of it. We're tearing out all the pavements coming out, curb for the most part is coming out, most of the sidewalks coming out. It'll all be brand new. We're probably looking to change it into a two-way street just to make it. It is safer that way. I know it's people have to get used to it at first, but it slows traffic. It tends to slow traffic down a little bit, especially with the new pavement. And then we've experienced this elsewhere. Yeah. Talk about this. Like as soon as we redid Dillon Avenue, you know, the complaints started to come in about how fast people are driving down Dillon Avenue. Now, you never would have driven 45. Well, a sane person probably wouldn't have driven 45 down the old Dillon Avenue. Yeah. But once we got it repaved, the curb and everything in, the speeding complaints roll in. And the same thing's going to happen with First Avenue. Right now, First Avenue is admittedly pretty tough in a lot of spaces. But as soon as you repave it, that just, you know, people drive how they feel comfortable. And everybody knows the speed limit sign isn't going to... Speed limit signs don't really change our behavior. Our behavior just determined on how comfortable we feel driving down a road. So we could mark it 25. People are still going to drive 35 if it's a brand new pavement. So either way, we'll be going through that process this year. That's a big one. Avenue D next to Kilgore Park is slated to be done this year. That was a carryover from last year. Parts that we've got. Two blocks of 4th Avenue were bid out last year, I believe from 5th to 7th, and we're looking to add 7th to 9th to it this year using this year's funds. So I know 4th Avenue is kind of heavily traveled, and we'll eventually look at seeing how long that one way needs to last or be there as well. But for now, that'll stay as it is because we're not doing the whole thing. Those are the big ones. I think we're the Torrey Pines neighborhood, we're going to start it a little bit on that. I can probably pull up my list here. I got a few other projects. I believe it's 43rd, which if you ever left Walmart or the old Staples of the Pine Tree Plaza area, that traffic intersection there, that's completely fallen apart. Mm. So we're looking to resurface that. 6th Avenue going north out of town is on the list this year. We've got it's a pretty tough North Lynn Boulevard, and so as well we're doing that, we've got our crews built the path from, I believe, 19th up to Grobe Road, 10 feet wide. And obviously the Park District built the trail from the corner of Lynn Boulevard up to Thomas Park and Franklin School. So there's just one little gap there to cross at Lynn Boulevard and from Grobe to Lynn. So we're going to get that all built this year as part of redoing 6th Avenue. And that'll be another relatively large project. And I think we've asked the engineers to also investigate 16th Avenue. Going from Lynn Boulevard down towards Lefevre. That's starting to fall apart pretty quickly, too. So those are some of our bigger projects this year. I know one of the things we announced a couple years ago, and this one, again, we can do everything we want, but if we don't get everybody on board, it makes it difficult. So we talked about 4th Avenue and 5th Avenue north of 19th, north of the high school there, and that's an older subdivision that doesn't have curb and gutter. We're looking to put curb gutter sidewalks back in there and really improve that. But we're struggling to get people to sign the construction easements, which just says, hey, the construction company can be in your yard so they can get the work done to put the curb in and fill in the ditches, put in the curb and gutter and the storm sewers. And that's the most frustrating part. That's a very time-consuming thing for us. And I know we had crews out last couple of weeks going up First Avenue. And it's just, you know, while we're patching potholes, we still need people on board to get some of the street work done in the summer, and that means signing off saying that, hey, we can work in the front yard of your house, and of course we're going to restore it, but we need that temporary construction easement, and trying to get those has been pulling teeth on 4th and 5th Avenue for some reason. And I know there's a lot of people up there who want to see the work done, have been promised the work and expecting it to be done, but until all the neighbors jump on board, we're kind of at a standstill, and We've resorted to sending certified letters, and I know we've had a couple of our employees, or at least one of our employees, working on the weekend trying to knock on doors to get people to sign letters. And it's just, it's very frustrating when you want to make some improvements to the road in front of someone's house, and we're not getting the cooperation back.
And do you want a nicer drive? You know, you want a nicer sidewalk? Do you want a nicer street? All you got to do is sign a letter. Yeah, and that's difficult. You know, just like the Swallows return to Capistrano, and the Cubs will go back to losing. You know, the other thing that's come up is election season. And, you know, in a little bit more than a month, we have elections going on here. And I really urge people to educate themselves where they can, talk to the candidates, and vote. We have, at the city level, we have three aldermen, or three people running for two aldermen at large spots. There's a contest there. At the township, there's a contest for the township supervisor. There's a contest for the township road commissioner. In Rock Falls, there's a three-way contest for mayor. You know, you do get the government you deserve, and that means getting involved and asking questions. I know the chamber here has been very good, and I think the Rock Falls chambers as well, you know, doing candidate forums. But, you know, people need to talk to those of who are willing to run for, who are running for office, to find out, you know, what is your view? You know, here's my concern for what's happening in the city. You know, the pothole is 5 feet wide and 20 feet deep. What are you going to do about it? You know, those are legitimate questions. Now, I can tell you, having run for office, I may not give the person the answer they want to hear, but they deserve an answer. So I would really urge people to get involved, to vote, to inform themselves, and you'll get ready, because you know, these are big elections. The at-large aldermen, alder people, I should say, are very important. You know, because they're not tied into a specific ward, they have to have more of a 35,000-foot view of the city than someone in a ward. We have three very talented candidates running for those two positions. The people need to know, and they need to vote. So anyway, I would urge people, you know, the signs are starting to pop up.
Yeah, the chamber's doing the candidate forum here on March 23rd.
There's
in-person and virtual, both.
So, you know, it's and I will tell you, as a candidate, if I'm asked questions, it makes me be on my game. You know, the election I ran where I was unopposed, you know, I didn't feel the need to have answers at the tip of my tongue like I did in the other two. So I would urge people to get involved, get informed, and vote.
And you're back on the 16th?
Yes.
Back on the
16th. I believe it's the 16th.
That tells me that there's a city council meeting that people can zoom in on. And
The 15th.
15th, and exercise their questions, and you're back on the 16th.
And you know, at this next meeting, we'll be talking about some of the big funds that are associated with the city, the capital fund, the general fund, you know, and how we spend money. You know, we need to look and see if there are things that can be done.
Well, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Schumer, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. I'm looking forward to a little bit warmer weather. It's amazing how it can only be 45 degrees and it feels warm out. You know, that tells you where we've been.
Yeah, shorts. I've been walking around shorts and a sweat jacket.
Of course,
going
you
in and out of the gym. So, well, just going in and out of the gym at Westwood. Although I did come out on Sunday afternoon after the sunset and with just shorts and a T-shirt that was mildly sweaty, and that was still brisk.
Well, I saw a fellow at the grocery store, you know, parking lot, walking in shorts and a T-shirt, and I said, "Nah, you know, I."
Yeah. Not yet.
I saw multiple people running on Saturday in shorts and T-shirts down Locust Street and 3rd Street going on.
Well, thank you again. We'll see you in a couple of weeks on the 16th.
Yes, and thank you to the citizens of Sterling who are listening.